Welcome to the House of Strauss.
Yeah, go for it.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Welcome, it's House of Strauss. We've got Andre Iguodala, Evan Turner. These are men that need no introduction. I might call this format stupid questions because
when I was
media, it's like we always had a context for whatever I was annoying you with the questions. You know, the Warriors were doing this. It's this point in the season. Now I feel like it's very open-ended. I can just ask very basic, stupid questions. I'll throw one at you for an example. What is the first play of a game feel like in an NBA game? Because I was just playing pickup, and it's like weird. Like the first play is really weird, and I was thinking to myself, is it weird for NBA players, or do they just practice so much that there's like no adjustment? The ball goes up, and you know, like I'm right in the flow. I'll go Andre then Evan. Stupid question number one.
I like that question, actually. For me, it gave me an idea who was locked in, like making sure everybody like set the tone for the first play. That's what it was all about. Like, all right, let's execute the first play, because if you locked in on the first play, it carries over. But coaches go berserk when you screw up the first play. It's like it's the first play of the game. And most of the times, most teams run the same first play all the time or variants of it. It's like, all right, let's get our guy a good look. Or get our guy to draw a double and get someone else a good look. And so it's like everybody wants to have their first look be a solid look, and they want to see a first shot go in. And so it's just like, it's kind of like that. It's not too much pressure and it's like relaxed, but at the same time, it's like, all right, let's have a good look at our first shot. Because, you know, like if you get a grenade on your first look, you pissed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's real. I think... to start the game is way different, right? Once I wasn't like relied on to be the go-to, like it's mad, like relaxed. And it's like, well, shoot, I don't have to shoot the first play of the game. And I know for sure I can get a stop. So like when it came down to it, all the pressure was over. I think certain games that you play, like you'll feel certain moments during the season where you're like, all right, this is a playoff game. Like this is a big game. Like we need this win. Then you'll see certain games where, you know what I mean? It's a conference game. You're well aware of it, and the tensions are high. But I thought after a certain time point, the tension was kind of loose in that sense. Like there wasn't much to really worry about or be uptight about.
Did you like being nervous? That's another stupid question, maybe. You know, because people talk about butterflies. They talk about throwing up before games. But they also talk about loving playing it and being addicted to the high of it. What was your relationship to that kind of feeling? We'll go opposite way. We'll go Evan, then we'll go Andre.
I don't think I ever got nervous more so than anxious. And that's an understatement. And I think one thing that just occurs, I would play anxious until things got locked in or like serious and it was winning time. That's where I could really lock in and stay focused. But until then, sometimes I just be anxious. I really wanted to win that bad, but never nerves, because when you prepare, you see half these guys when you're like younger. Like you go up against Brian, it's like, all right, well, I win that matchup. Nobody's expecting to win that matchup. So it is what it is. And then if he's not Brian, you kind of like your odds. Like, you know what I'm saying? And that's that's coming from guarding the wings. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I like being nervous, but I would say it's anxious. You know, that healthy anxiety where you're really trying to get to it. I will always say the worst part of the game was the day leading up to the game until the tip off. Like once the game tipped off, I was in my comfort zone. Like, okay, it's easy now. But like even in the warm ups before the game, I'm like, hurry up. Like, let's go. Like, I'm trying to get here. It's like, because you're looking for moments to relax before the game, but you're just so ready to get there that it's throwing you off. Like the finals were always crazy moments because you couldn't relax. And so imagine being locked in for 2 weeks straight. Like, it's anxiety all day long, except for the game. The game is when I'm free.
But even think about the timeouts, though. Like, those are extra long timeouts. And you sit there when it's a big game. It's like, all right, bro, just let us get to it and kill. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and that's it. Like, imagine you go get a German Shepherd and he's been trained and you say his word, like, whatever. It's like, no, bro, they don't tone down once you say stop. Like, they ready to, you know what I mean? They ready to finish the job. And I think with athletes, we're creature of habits and, you know, we're creature of competition. Like, certain people don't feel alive until they compete. Like, even now, I walk the streets and I have a lot of great things going on. But, like, when I put on music, I still think about, like, going to the game and dunking somebody or, like, a fake scuffle. Like, that's the best thing you can ever do. That's when you feel alive. For real. Straight up.
Well, how are you guys handling being retired from basketball? I saw on the Gilbert Arenas podcast, they were talking about it being this big void in your life. And they were, I think it was Rashad McCants was there. I mean, who else was there? Was Kenyon Martin there?
Kenyon Martin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And they were talking about the pain of it. There is a real vulnerability to what they were talking about. Now, you guys, I know, have full lives and a lot of stuff, but is this a void or are you happy to be done with that chapter?
I mean, go, Dre. Like, shoot, I walk around like the vice president. I mean, Dre got the real problems, you know what I mean? But, like, with sports, man, it's the purest thing on earth. And, like, it's your best day, it's your heyday. It's when you don't have to be a gentleman. You can act the fool, act immature, go after literally what you want. And it's just, like, your true self. So, like, when you go down in that, there's nothing pure in basketball. But I think, I don't know, coming back from it, you always miss competing, but I never ever like kind of got hung up on like the what ifs. I don't know about Dre. You did 28 years.
Give me 2 seconds. Yes, man. And you just hit the break and just hit it and put it in reverse or drive. That's how you started. You ain't got to turn nothing on. All right, cool. The Tesla is a different type of vehicle. My first time in a Tesla, I did not know how to start it. I'm 20 minutes and it's just push the brake and go. But that's my mom. I think for me, what was the question? I forgot. Oh, whether the you void. The void.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm glad I found this passion for golf because that's the void. Because I'm competing against myself, and I don't think there's anything like competing against yourself. You know, like, I've only played 2 rounds of golf this year, and it's like sad in me. Like, I'm really a sad human being. But I found like little moments, 20 minutes here and there, where I learned how to do like certain practice drills, and I'm just getting myself ready for when I can start playing again. And like, that's just my passion. That's what I found. I don't even think about going to play basketball. Like, I miss it in terms of like being around the house, just the purity of the game of basketball. My son's playing, so I still love it. And, you know, I still pick it apart when I watch it, but I haven't had that itch to run up and down the court. Now, one-on-one, I'll do that with my son, but running up and down the court, like, they can have that.
I mean, where are you at with golf right now? Because I'm curious about this. I played golf recently, and I did way better. You know, I'm novice. I did way better than what my expectations were, but then on the back nine, completely fell apart. The guy I was with, he was a scratch golfer, and he said that's what it's like for you guys sometimes because it's a mental thing. And he asked me what I was thinking about whenever I was swinging. I said, well, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking about that. He goes, I'm not thinking about a goddamn thing. Yep. I'm not thinking about anything. Are you at that point with the golf where when you swing, it's just there's nothing there? Or are you in the zone that I'm in where it's like, oh, turn the hips and, you know, focus on this and whatever, whatever that wears you down?
Well, I got really good. Like, I got near scratch 2 years ago. But then since then, it's like it's gone to shit, essentially. And so now for me, I'm kind of getting back into a practice where I can practice for like 20 minutes when I'm at home. Cause I got a little simulator. So I got like 30 minutes. I'll do like real drills. It's like the mic and drill, or it's like the ball handling drill. Like, I got those types of drills that keeps me fine. So I can go out there and be fine, but I'm not playing to the level of that I want to. So for me, I keep it to one swing thought. All right, we keep it here while I'm playing. So I am able to enjoy myself, even though I'm hitting the ball amazing right now. I just can't score. That's just like touch up here and there, putting, chipping, going OB once or on both nines. And then, you know, that turns into, you know, 7 over on both sides as opposed to 2 over.
I'm wondering, how do you know what the realistic expectations are of yourself? I mean, we can bring this back to the basketball, because I thought about this with both you guys, where I think you were talking to Arenas, or no, you're referencing Arenas. You were talking about how if your team's potential is 28 games and you win 28 games, then that's a good season. Like, how did you know what you guys were supposed to be as players? Because you get drafted, there's all this pressure in that market. I mean, how do you know what you're capable of, and did it change over the course of the career? I guess we'll start with Evan.
So I guess you don't really know what you're capable of till you get to the league and see it's the best league in the world. You understand what I'm saying? So like hype and all that stuff doesn't matter. You really got to roll the ball out and play. I think one thing that occurred when you go in and, you know, you don't really hit the expectations of like what you're capable of. I think with everything, you have to be good before you become great. So then you try to fall in the roles of like what helps you be good. Like if I'm sitting there saying I'm not going to be an all-star, one thing I said was I was going to make the playoffs every single year. You know what I mean? And like legit, if you had to check out whatever, it's going to be like, okay, I'm not going to scream this. I'm not going to do anything besides like let my work like do the part. Like the report is going to be, yo, they made the playoffs, decent locker room dude, and you just finesse from there and you just try to fit your role and try your best at doing what your role is. And one thing I always said with Brad Stevens was just like accept your role, know your role, and just star in your role. So when it came down to being like, hey, I'm not going to be a star and I'll be the best player off the bench, you know what I mean, in the league, or like I'll make sure I have the best unit in the, you know, in the league, or one of the top units in the league. And it just came from like, you know, challenging yourself in little wins. It might not be all-star. People aren't giving you 20 shots a game. It's like, all right, then I'll just shoot 44% and be efficient in every situation I can be. And that's where the challenges really come in.
And I think I'm in the same thought process or the same mindset in terms of I didn't know what my minutes were going to look like coming in as a rookie. And I just told myself, like, I'm going to guard everybody and I'm going to lock everybody up. Like, I knew that it was really difficult for people to score on me. So I just took that mindset. And as far as like expectations from the team, it's a trick bag question because you don't know what you don't know. And when you don't know that your organization's priorities aren't centered around winning and you're trying to go out and win every single night, that is I'm trying not to curse, but it's like a mind fuck at the end of the day. Think about this. Like, I really thought that I was going to go out and win every single game that I played. And I really was like, we got to do whatever it takes to try to win a championship, you know, sacrifice this and that. And then when you go and see other places and you see how it's done, you're like, wait, this is how you put yourself in a position to win a championship. Like, it's kind of crazy, you know, and I think that's something that we have to work on as a league, is raising that bottom and making sure that, you know, everyone's putting their best efforts forward in terms of trying to uplift their youth, you know, trying to develop their talent and trying to compete every night. And I'm not saying you're going to go spend crazy over the luxury tax, but you have to set up your organization where people come in and feel like, you know, they can get the most out of themselves and their talents.
Yeah, and that's real. And that's a 1,000%, because when you sit there, it's only like 7 or 8 teams in the league that are really trying to win. And then like when you start breaking it down, athletes to get some type of rap where, or basketball players, like, we're lazy, we don't care, we don't do that. It's like, no, you'll show up. What's the man's name that got fired from Atlanta? I remember showing up in Atlanta, the GM, and we're showing up. I got traded from a Western Conference team, but I'm like super hype. I'm like, hey, bro, it's going to be a good run. I think we can do some stuff to really make it to the playoffs and da da da. He just laughed. And they like literally just laughed. And I was like, all right. So I seen this before. So you're not trying to make it to the playoffs. But then we sat there and we show up and everything, and his energy was like, y'all need to do this, y'all need to do that. It's like, bro, you're wasting grown men's time. You just trade for Luka, you goddamn idiot. Like, you know what I mean? Or traded Luka for Trey. And then legit, you're sitting in here, demeaning the vets, and then trying to show the kids how to win, and they don't know. You know what I mean? And you get into situations with idiots like that where it's like, not everybody's trying to win.
I mean, do you think that's about tanking? Do you think that's just about people? Like, what do you think that is? Why aren't Why isn't everybody trying to win? That's another stupid question, basic question. I was around the Warriors for a while. They were trying to win, at least when I was there. Maybe I haven't experienced the real NBA outside of that.
Oh, no, that was different. The Warriors, that's a different thing. I think obviously, like, you have to build for the future and see what's best or whatever. But, like, any year when you're stepping up and, like, that takes off a year of your career, you know what I mean?
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say, you know, I think it's more so you have certain types of ownership groups where you got some who are just, you know, they're competitors in their nature. And so they want to go out and win. And so the group that I became a part of their group for the National Women's Soccer League team, Sixth Street Capital, like just getting their DNA in their claw. Like they're super competitive. Like they want to win like right now. And some of them don't know what they don't know as well in terms of like, it's really hard to win in professional sports. Like some of them think they got so much money, they can just buy a championship and it doesn't work like that. Like we saw what's going on with the baseball, with the Mets, or, you know, you see it in basketball. You know, Brooklyn had the crazy salary cap the last couple of years where it was KD, Kyrie and James. Like it's never guaranteed. And they didn't, I shouldn't say they didn't sniff a championship, but it was like always something getting in their way. Like it's not guaranteed. It's really hard. But I prefer those over, you know, somebody who's just in it for the profile and the celebrity of things. And or you got some who are in it for understanding, like, listen, I bought the Donald Sterling method, the Donald Sterling methodology, where it was buy the team for $30 million. I'm always going to keep fresh talent because we're going to be at the minimum on the salary cap spend. And I'm going to make money off this thing because I'm in a big market. And like, winning isn't a priority, and it kind of throws things off. And, you know, I don't know this for sure, but we heard many things about the league sentiments towards him, and, you know, they couldn't wait till he moved on and did something else, you know, and it might be like owners like that throughout the league.
Yeah. And Ethan, what I'm saying is winning is too hard to not try to win. You understand what I'm saying? Like when you grow up, no, but it's the truth. When you grow up, like winning's not easy. Like Doug Collins, like he said that, like the first day he ever coached me, it's like, you know how many people have a winning record? It's too easy to lose.
Yeah.
This is what I'm trying to tell you. Like it's far too easy to lose. We didn't show up here on our dream level to be like, hey, nah, we're not going to win this year. Like you might literally just say we're tanking. One tank year is never okay in any situation because it's too easy to lose in life. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it's not okay, but well, we're just tanking. Like, no, that's dumb. If we don't understand that, then what are we talking about?
I mean, that's a crazy part of your business, that's part of it, that everybody, it's the hyper-competitive, top-level competition, dog-eat-dog, everybody on the same page, we all need to win, but then some people are intentionally trying to lose to, like, win later on. It is... I mean,
I say you just got to compete. Like, okay, I understand that you're trying to position yourself for a draft pick. Like, okay, because this is a funny thing, right?
Yeah.
I have probably the utmost respect for the Miami Heat and what Pat Riley's been able to do his entire career. You know, E.T. and I, we interviewed the writer for Blood in the Garden, an amazing book on just the Knicks in the 90s. And it kind of spoke on Pat Riley before he got there and when he got there. And then when he left to go to Miami. So you're getting this whole path of, you know, Pat Riley. And then I was able to play for him. And one thing about him, he said, I will never tank for a draft pick. And there's been really, really good. I mean, this is a, you know, you're a true journalist. So I'm sure you would want to dissect and dive into this. Maybe this is one of your crazy articles. Has Pat Riley ever tanked? And there's an argument that one year it was quite possible. It wasn't Beasley. This was way. This might have been like the 90s. This might have been the 90s where it was like one game and he played lesser guys more than normal. But Pat is all about like, I'm not tanking. And it's funny because he's reached the finals probably more than any other franchise in the last, what, 4 decades? It's kind of crazy. And considering how he's done it, I mean, like Beasley and Wade were his highest picks, but who would have thought Dwayne Wade was going to be this good when he got drafted? I mean, it was Carmelo and it was LeBron. And D. Wade was an older guy. He, you know, I think he redshirted and then he did 3 years of college.
And he came in and shoot three.
Right.
Yeah. Seriously.
I mean, Yeah, I mean, Morey, I think Daryl Morey's teams have been like that in his career, where they're just never, they're never tanking. But it's interesting that I think one of Morey's, what do we call it? He was a mentor to Sam Hinkie, and Sam Hinkie is famous for that. How do you guys feel about that when you saw that whole experiment of the process and the nearly explicit, we're going to try to lose again and again and again? I mean, does it offend you at a certain level? Does it not offend you? Do you think it's just, hey, at least they're admitting it? Evan, what do you think of that?
I play devil's advocate because it almost worked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, had the ball had not rolled in, I still think, like, I have two different ways of viewing it. It almost worked. I think
championships.
Yeah, I think one thing that occurred, to be honest with you, is when they traded Dre and we were 2 minutes away from the Eastern Conference Finals. Dre was 27, I was 22. Such and such was 21. Like, you know what I mean? Like, things went up and down in that sense. And then you kind of just, I think what Hinkie did, you have to tank for the future. But like you said, nothing's guaranteed. And then, like, what you're tanking for was, like, shout out to, I like you got Embiid, you know what I mean? But it was just, it was 4 or 5 years of just nonsense and padded stats and finesse fesses and all this cool. I was playing with dudes that had 4 year non-guaranteed contracts. You know what I mean? It was just like weird stuff that was going on where it's like, oh, all that for it not to work, I guess, is whatever. Like, I don't take it personal or anything because you understand the business of basketball. It was just like, it just didn't work.
Yeah, man, my career just took off. So I was, I mean, it's funny. I have never received such reception after I left the place, you know, like. I couldn't walk down the street while I was there without getting cursed out. And 2 years removed from there is welcome back. Welcome back home. It was like these warm welcomes. I was just like, where am I?
You know, brotherly love, man. You're in the city of brotherly love.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. And, you know, like I have, you know, one of my partners at my VC firm is from Philadelphia. Two of the partners are. And one of them, she always talks about, you know, the people that she knows that are really big fans of mine and they love me. But I have to remind them, like, I never experienced these people the 8 years I was there. And so there's both sides to it. And so I do have definitely have an appreciation for, you know, Philly and, you know, how it helped mold me. I heard Zumoff is the announcer there, and he had a podcast and he had a guy on that had a really good point. And, you know, I definitely don't take things personally, but he was saying, you know, I saw something in Iggy where, you know, if he got mad, he would just go to the hole and dunk it. And he was saying, you know, I would have loved for him to have more like that Kobe mentality where he knew he was the best night in, night out. Like he was just a nice kid. You know, he was a pass first guy. And I would have loved for him to just have like more of that Kobe mentality. And I appreciated that. But there's always the but. I didn't know how good I was. And I don't think they wanted me to know how good I was during those moments. I mean, ET and I talk about it all the time. Like we never really experienced, and this is no knock on anybody because you only know what you know, but we never really experienced certain things, you know, in terms of facilities and like player development. And
the priority of a player development. Like when you go elsewhere to develop your young talent, it's an OD priority, almost to the point where like they'll pull you to the side and be like, hey, bro, I know you're number two pick, but like, we need to make sure this kid's cool and this kid's good and he's developing. That's it. Like, that's an understatement of priority of development. Like, you go somewhere, you get the shit kicked out of you like John Wall did, and now you turn into an all-star in year three. Like, priority of development. It's not about the coaches. The coach understands he's here for 18 months to develop this kid. Everybody understands legit the next 7 years is for that dude. There's never been a priority of development in that sense, you know?
Well, do you guys think you would have had a totally different career if it was a totally different situation? Do you ever think about that? Or do you just think I would have been more or less the player I was regardless?
Yeah, well, my jumper never came. So I think I probably would have been the player I was regardless. So.
Nah, I disagree.
No, I'll joke. If I went number three or went number seven my year like I wanted to the Warriors, if I went anywhere but two, I mean, Dre is a future Hall of Famer, a world-class dude. Like, somebody lied to me, or the front office people lied to whatever. But, like, especially back then, when you especially back then, it wasn't like we played together. Pause. It was like you had one wing and one big, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like back in the day, like to feature. And like, I just think if I went third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th, I mean, like, you're a Gordon Hayward fan, bro. Think about that, bro.
No. So my point is that. He just made a point that basically, you know, stamps what I said as well. We both kind of stamping what each other are solidifying what each other are saying, because what E.T. just said, the front office told E.T., this is your team. You're going to come in and take over. His agent's like, oh, you're better than all those guys. The front office is saying this. I'm on the team. And E.T.'s like, no, these dudes are good. And I'm like, this is what they think of me. This is what they think of the other guys. And so it was just, and this is not like, this is no knock on anyone that was there. Like, I still got great relationships. Like, who was our GM?
I like them all, even though I hate it.
Who's my man? His son's the coach.
With the ball hit.
Son's the coach.
Krasinski. Kredina. Da-da-da. What's his name?
Stefanski. Stefanski.
I love
Ed. Ed is great people. Ed would drive that Ben's C-class. And we like, yo, you're the GM of an NBA team. I think you can get an S-class. But he was very fruitful. He was very frugal in his spending, and he had an old C class. He got the job, he got a brand new one, and but good people. But I don't put everything on GMs now that I learned as well. It's like sometimes the ownership groups are making all the decisions, and it's just filtered through the GM. So the GM's gonna take all the heat.
Oh, yeah, GMs are miserable. GMs are the most miserable people I know in the league.
They get the company card, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And great travel.
Yeah. But they're managing up and they're managing down. Mm-hmm. They don't get the release. Like, coaches are kind of miserable, but coaches at least are going through the grind. Like, coaches, like what we're talking about, the void. Like, coaches can fill the void. They can be really present. I don't know. I mean, GMs, it looks good. Being Bob Myers looked good, especially where he's 6'8", full head of hair and all that.
Danny Ainge, too.
He was always stressed out. Like, I remember when you guys were in the finals, Andre, and Bob's miserable because he's having to think about, like, scouting and the draft, like, next season. He can't just be right here. And I feel like GM in the NBA – that's like that has the biggest gap between the job fans think they want and what it's actually like in terms of enjoyment and day to day.
Yeah, but I like to go along the lines of ET. It's great travel. You make really good money. You can play like the blame game.
For like 4 or 5 years.
Listen, coach, the blame
coach. You get to talk to the owner that the coach don't.
We got to learn how to. become experts at the blame game. And I was in Philly 1 year as a coach, get fired, right? The next year, the GM gets fired, right? The next year, it was a PR blunder. So they blamed the season on the PR girl. She gets fired. I never forget when she got fired. They fired her. Then the next year, you make a big trade. You going along the lines, it's five people you can get removed before you get axed. So you got 5 years of free leeway of just like you can guess your way through 5 years and getting something that'll hold your position. Oh. Like everything's about like, how do I submit myself into being here for the long haul? That's corporate America that I've learned now that I'm on the corporate side.
Well, and maybe my perspective is outdated because I'm off the grind of it. I'm not day to day in the NBA. Now with the play-in tournament, you're kind of always between rebuilding and on the cusp of the playoffs, and you can sell that to the owner. And I feel like the play-in has really helped GM job security. And now
Miami just got to the finals from the play-in.
Yeah,
you can finesse that all the way to the bank.
But I was a big fan of the play-in too, because Dre, remember our second year in the league, we're in Milwaukee and we're waiting to see if we're going to go to Miami or the Bulls. And, like, when you think of points or sometimes, I love that, the 7, 8, 9, 10 game. Because it's like a lot of people lose their jobs and get traded based off that opportunity, like that slip of, like, points. Or somebody was out the night when there was a tiebreaker. Like, you know what I mean?
True story.
That's it. I'm just saying, like, it's a big deal.
I'll bring it back to Philadelphia and you guys, because I'm interested in your dynamic. Because like Andre was your vet, right? Right, Evan? Is that, you know, like there's like a 5-year difference between you guys. Like those sorts of dynamics are kind of interesting to me, because it probably starts off where he's the worldly guy, and now you guys are just really good friends. Does it still feel like he's the vet, or does it feel like you're on the same level? You've kind of, you know, you meet in the middle at a certain point.
No, it's honor amongst thieves. I don't tip my hat to a lot of people. So like I take great pride when it's time to tuck your tail. You know what I mean? So like when it comes down to it, it's not like tuck my tail in the sense of like, well, it's my brother. So I know he deserves that level of respect. You understand what I'm saying? So it's not like on the same level of like, oh, we're the same. And he respects me at a great time. But when it comes time for me to do my part, I have to do my part. It's not do my part of like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. It's what he deserves. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, I think that's shit. It's not many people in this world I really do that for. So that's part of, you know, humility on my part, but it's just the truth.
I can relate to that, you know, in a different world. And I'll just reference this guy because I know Andre's a fan of Ben Thompson of Stratechery. Mm-hmm. That's a situation where I'm friends with Ben, but if Ben tells me to do something or Ben gives me advice, he's been there and he's built this thing and he's done it in a way that I just basically have to almost delegate. And I go, okay, yes. You know, I'm listening, you know, and it's, you're friends with somebody, but there's just something there where they're the veteran. And I just, you know, maybe that's a stupid analogy. I don't know what, Andre.
But, No, it's just the truth. And I think one thing that occurs is not even for Dre, but it's like just as adults or even people that are to be egotistical. It's like, no, when you meet somebody smarter, don't compete with them, learn from them. And, you know, and take that as an ally. And the biggest thing is just your circle. And not a weird way, but I mean, it's a blessing to have Dre in your corner. So that's a God gift. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. And I think you hit it right on the head. For sure, Ethan, I think reliability is a very, very underestimated quality. And, you know, you talk about Ben from Stratechery, and I've learned, like, I don't rely on too many people. Like, I don't think people are capable of being relied upon. And so when you're able to find people that you can rely upon, is like, make sure I keep this person as close to me as possible for as long as possible. And I think that's even bigger than, you know, somebody, you know, me being ET's big brother, and or, you know, the thought of me being smarter than him, which I, you know, I would disagree with that. But I just think like being able to, like, my big thing is like having people around me that can cover up my blind spots. Like, I'll never forget on my birthday, ET says something that I'll never forget. I don't like he knows, but I don't think he knows exactly what I'm talking about. Where he said something, I was like, "Whoa!" And then there was I was proactive, coming from that, and you know, it could save my life potentially. You know what I'm saying? And I just think, you know, just identifying individuals who are honest with you, because like we can have honest conversations. Like, we don't have to pull punches with one another. And I think that's a key in terms of like on the court with your teammates as well. You know, the best ones have the most respect for each other because they know they don't have to pull punches, because they know at the end of the day, I'm pulling for you and I know you're pulling for me. And we both going to get to, you know, our maximum potential, which I always repeat, like the success is reaching your maximum potential.
Mm. Well, you guys are friends. And I was always wondering from the outside observing how team dynamics work. Can you almost have a bond with somebody in the NBA on a team that's powerful, but friendship is not even part of that? I felt like I observed it, but I don't know if that's true. And I want some more thoughts on that one.
That's funny. I always use Avery Bradley as an example. And I love like Avery Bradley to death. He's a good dude. He was just to himself. And Tyler Zeller as well. Like, not saying we were the most dynamic duo, but I always look back on it, like, that's wild that, like, when I look at tapes or plays, it's like we rely on each other so much and we really didn't have a relationship besides, hey, what's going on? Or, like, us joking for 5 or 10 minutes. And I was with Joe Burrow the other day, and obviously him and Ja'Marr Chase are friends, but I was like, man, isn't it a blessing that you met him years ago and y'all can go around the world and tell him to go deep out, pause, and it's going to work. Like, isn't that something? It's like when you have like a backdoor play with somebody, it's like, yo, how did that come about? But like, you be grateful that y'all speak the same language, because that dude is like, you found me and I found you. And y'all partner up and y'all kind of butt buddy for the rest of the season. You literally might sit there to see each other, but like, hey, you ready to work? I used to get 4 assists off Tyler Zeller every night. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know this about myself, and I'm sure like E.T., we share those same qualities, and I think that's how we came up with the name for the podcast, Point Forward, where our teammates love playing for us. And, you know, I didn't really realize it until I played in Miami, where I'm getting feedback from Miami Heat culture, like, you know, your teammates love playing with you. Like, they're just happy to be out there in the court, just taking stress off guys. And that goes into, like, so I've had teammates where I've built great relationships with just because our camaraderie and, you know, the how we were able to be always be in sync during the games. But then I've seen the other side, like, you know, Tyler Hero and Jay Crowder were like super close. Like, they hung out. Like, you know, they were in the clothes and a drip, and like everything that they did, they were tight. And so I didn't really hang out with them as much, but we had crazy chemistry on the court. And I do have teammates in the past, you know, Denver, Philly, you know, throughout my career, the Warriors, where there are guys that I just absolutely did not like. Like, I don't like you. I know you don't like me. But we had, but when we got on the court, we were going to get it done. And we knew we could rely upon each other. So it was that mutual respect.
This might be a super stupid question, but do you think how somebody plays, do you think that's a part of their personality? Or do you think it has nothing to do with their personality?
Well, I know quiet people that shoot a lot. You know, I would never guess you'd be this selfish. But you know what I mean? Like, they say Jalen Brunson. Everybody loves to play with Jalen Brunson. He's a good dude. Not love to play with him, but like, they like him as a person. And it might be like, yo, it might be tough to play with a shoot first point guard. You know what I mean? And I mean, personality is different, man. You play, it's so hard to really take that in consideration when you think about the business of basketball, bro. We in competition. You shoot 1,000 shots per day. Like, shit, like, I go to the gym, shoot 500 shots. Like, if Dame were to be like, why are you shooting 15 times a night? It's like, because I shot 2,500 shots this week. Okay? Like, you can't knock me. I don't want to show up and not shoot and play. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do 28 minutes and get 3 shots. I got people here.
No, that's funny. I'm on the end of the spectrum where if you're not a good person in terms of, you know, if your reason for playing isn't about winning, you know, some people have to be selfish. Like Lou Williams, 6-man score. Like we can't get the most out of him unless he's getting up 15 attempts. Like, that's separate, but he's here to win. But you got some guys who are just blatantly, you know, disrespectful and blatantly selfish, who, like, you look at them, you be like, yo, this is why things don't go your way. This is why I don't like, there's something about you I don't like. And then it actually gets solidified while we're on the court. Like, hey, okay. Yeah. You're a bad person.
Yeah, I mean, but you look at Michael Porter Jr., like, he's a decent dude, and he ain't passed since he
But the good person makes up for it.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
I mean, I like the idea that there's a situation for such a person where they can help you by being selfish, you know? I think that's you know, I think that's an example right there, maybe with Porter Jr. Well, you know, as we sort of round near the end of this, we got to talk about the media, because I'm so curious about this. I'm curious, do you have a mentality when the media goes into the locker room? Are you trying to do anything? Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel like you're on red alert? We'll start with Evan, then we'll go with Andre. I'm very curious for Andre, now that we're looking back at it all.
Yeah, I don't. To be honest with you, when Philly's a unique city dealing with media, so I think when I kept it real a few times and how it was like taken, I was like, you know what, bro? After this, like, I'll never take media serious again. Like, so if you go and look at my early days of Philly, and people can go check it out, and then go look halfway through, it's like, if y'all want to make up whatever I said or anything else like that, or when I say something sincere, I'm legit done. Like, that was the day I just started being, like, funny at it. It's just like, I don't even know what questions you ask me. I was just like, yo, whatever you think, I'm just going to make sure it comes off as though I'm a happy-go-lucky individual and not speak the feelings of, like, this is a terrible environment for me, and you're asking me why I'm not successful. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? So after that, I was just like, yo, don't give them too much. When you show up, be their friend, be happy they made it into the NBA locker room, and call it a day. But at the end of the day, like, I know y'all don't know shit. And not saying you personally, but it's just like, you might be talking to a person just trying to pay rent, and they literally play lacrosse. How can you take that serious? We're talking pro basketball, and the people covering it don't have to be pro or have any type of history. And then they go home and write stuff out that's nonsense. There's nothing serious about it. So once I realized that, I just started laughing at it. It's like, this is all a joke. I just hope they don't ruin my reputation, and my grandma doesn't read anything off the wall because she actually cares about effing a person. Mm. And not some weirdo making a 3-paragraph thing, misunderstanding the backgrounds. They never grew up in the locker room, and they just think it's cool they got a press pass.
Mm.
Spread that word, Ethan. Spread that word to your homies. You too, Anthony.
I don't have any issue with the whole don't know anything. I feel like the biggest leap I made is when I realized how little I knew. But it's funny, in life, you're at your most arrogant at the beginning of things when you think you know everything, and you've got to make that, you know, because once, it's why I call this dumb questions. You need to, you know, approach it. Like, once you learn, hey, this team has, the coach has these hand signals. You don't know what they are. You know, you don't know what they're doing out there. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because you're not at the practices, and, you know, you just got to be a receptacle. But, you know, some people would say sometimes I was and maybe sometimes I wasn't. But I need Andre's perspective before we get on out of here on this whole thing.
I think it's more in terms of what are your intentions, and was able to learn a ton throughout my career. Because, I mean, being in Philly with ET, I'm naturally a goofy, laughing, you know, happy person naturally. But when you just get bogged down and you have to turn on to be something you're not, to protect yourself, it's like the shield goes up. And I'll never forget the, you know, front page of the Philadelphia Inquirer or Tribune, whichever one of them, the Philadelphia Inquirer, where it was Andre McNabb was the headline. Like, it was big, bold letters, because it's like, he's aloof. He won't connect with the fans. And I'm like, man, I'm naturally a happy person. But every time the game ends, and I don't even know I'm in a situation where winning isn't a priority, but I'm getting blamed for that. Like, I got to have a shield up every time I speak to you. And so quite naturally, it's like being in an abusive relationship. Like, oh, I got to go home and deal with this person now. And you and as an athlete, because I make, you know, 80%, 70% of the max, because that's my market. I have to be able to accept it just because of the salary behind it. Like, you got to take it. It comes with it. This is like, no, I really don't, because we're not even looking at it from the right perspective. It's just the culture of this market. Yeah. And then I go on to, I'll take it to Miami, or I'll take it to the Warriors, where it was amazing. The first 2-3 years was amazing, because after the first 2 or 3 years, we start seeing people you never seen before. Now you starting to understand the business of basketball. Mm. Where now you got beat writers who move out to the Bay just to cover our team. And they've never done that before. So now understanding, like, you got to write something about us 3 times a week. And it has to be news that people are attracted to. So you everything just becomes watered down, and everything gets, like, over sensationalized. Where it's just like, every story is a story. I gave a story of how Utah is a great city because you can lock in and just be ready to play basketball. And it turned into a whole culture of nightlife. Utah has no life, and I'm killing the city. I'm like, what are we talking about? Where are we going? Where are we going with this? Like, I've gone viral for so many things where I was actually paying respects to the particular subject, and it was flipped around. I'm like, okay, this is what we're talking about. So now I'm knowing, like, y'all leveraging me, y'all leveraging our team, y'all leveraging Steph Curry to get on. And this is becoming, like, ET has his phrase, it's a finesse fest. And so it's like, it's not even serious right now. So when I give an interview after, you know, the referees do what the referees do on any given night in the NBA in Minnesota, and I'm like, you know, I just go along with what Master says with the schedule, But now I'm on the phone with the FBI talking about, what did you mean by that? And it's like, man, are y'all serious, man? I understand like, how bro, this
y'all,
game goes.
Y'all 400 years too late, bro.
Come on, man. Come on, man.
Y'all a couple years too late.
Yeah. And so they want, and they try to take out the humility and humanity of the athlete when we feel certain ways. And it's just like, come on, man, I gave my everything to this. Like, at least give me that respect. Like, I come to work every single day and give it my all. Like, I'm actually taking care of the game and doing my part. And then I go end it with Miami, where when I get there, you know, and I'm you're trying to fill out the culture of things and how they deal with certain things. And it's like the way they deal with the media, it's just like, I know exactly what I'm going to get day in and day out. And there's beauty in that and some consistency, because it's like, they filtered all the BS out. It's like, nah, all good news. All news ain't good news. Like, and this is what we stand for. And this is our message night in, night out. Win, lose, or draw. This is our message. This is the Heat culture. And I was like, huh. So I was able to relax in those settings because I knew it was about just about the game of basketball and just how we approach it and how serious we are about our craft. And if you don't respect it, you don't get access. And so I had huge respects for that.
Yeah, and shout out to the PR guys. We need to blame, the same way we blame like GM, we need to blame the PR guy. Because you be sitting there like, bro, did you know they're going to ask me this dumbass question? Like, damn, Mike, shit. I'm one step away from suicide. And they're going to push me over the brink. Blame the PR guy, bro. That lady should have got fired. Because you sit there like, what type of shit is this?
I remember her name right now, but that was not her fault. Where some guys claimed they didn't get information and they weren't where they supposed to be, and she got blamed for it, and then she got fired, and that was that's who got the axe for that season's underperformance. It was insane.
That's crazy.
Man, I mean, people gonna look it up. They know exactly who it is.
I hate that you guys got a hard out right now, because I feel like we could just do a whole other podcast on the media. So maybe that will be for the next conversation, because I got some thoughts. It's very interesting. It's very interesting now that you are media to see what your perspective on this whole, you know, on this whole industry might be. You guys were great. Thanks so much for doing this. I always tell the guests, you know, what do you want to promote on the way out of here? I know you got a lot of things going on. I take it, you know, maybe the point forward, that might be something you might want to promote on the way out of here. You know, what else?
Positivity. I subscribe to the House of Strauss. You have some amazing articles.
Ooh.
But give me like a super in-depth, crazy positive article. Like, you break down gambling. You was on the refs, boy. You had the league in a frenzy with how he said they could turn on and turn off scoring. That was an interesting write-up. But it was good. It's a great conversation. Keep having it. No. Seriously, go get the reps. Go get their ass. I'm kidding, but I'm serious.
Evan.
Just pushing P, man. Positivity. I'm staying out the way. No, real shit, man. We going into a crazy time. And, you know, we're going into moments not to get deep where, you know, even elections coming up. And I think when we all get in certain emotions, we forget, you know, even what you believe in, what God preaches or whatever, just like leading with love and leading with respect. And I think, you know, I always tell people, like, you do your part, I'll do mine. And we finesse from there. So that's it.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys.